kena cengenan dasya, jenan jenan selakaya, saksu sembelatan jenan tasmai Sri Rave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam, Stapitam Vena Bhutale, Sayam Prakadamayam, Dadati Sa Pandantitam. Manjakopa Durvista, Kripa Sindhu Bayevacha, Patitanam Pabinevyo, Vaishnavya Namaha. The Asuras had snatched away the Amrita, the nectar, and there was dissension amongst them. Why? Because as soon as the individual is the center of his life, then naturally there is conflict with others, because he's thinking what is best for me is the best thing, and someone else is thinking what's best for me is the best thing. So naturally, what's best for me will conflict with other people, because I want the wealth, I want the power, I want the prestige for myself, I want the enjoyment for myself. So naturally, self-centeredness breeds conflict in society. So what unites people? There are different concepts. So when you have several individuals born of the same parents, there is a concept that unites them. I am a member of this family, in virtue of the parents that we have in common. So that concept, because the concept is what unites. So that concept will unite a family. But that unity amongst the people in that family may conflict with the unity of another family, because the self-interest of one family will conflict with the self-interest of another family. So you need another concept that unites those two families, and that concept is community. We are members of the same community. So although we're individuals, although we're members of families, but yet because we're members of the same community, that concept unites us and keeps us from fighting each other. But yet there are other communities, and we'll fight with other communities. So then there's the concept of nation that unites. And then one nation will fight another concept. So you need a bigger, still bigger unifying concept if you actually want peace, and that is humanity. But then humanity gets together and kills all the animals. So really, to actually have peace, the concept that you will unite everyone is that we aham bija pada pita tasmad brahma mahayoniya mahadyoniya aham bija pada pita. That Krishna, God, is the seed-giving father of everyone, and that we are all in the same family, regardless of which body we are in, whether we are in an animal body or a human body, a bird body or a human body, or from this country or that country. So really, when Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita at the end of the fifth chapter what the peace formula is, he's supplying that concept. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam. Knowing this, that Krishna is the bhoktaram, he is the enjoyer. It's not either me or my family or my community or my nation who's the enjoyer, or humanity that's the enjoyer. It's Krishna who's the enjoyer. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. He is the controller, and this one, he's the Maha Ishwar, the great controller of everything. So unless one controls, how can one enjoy? If things are out of control, one can't enjoy properly. So he is the enjoyer, he is the controller. And not only that, he is Suryam, the dear friend of all living entities. And knowing this, Gyatnavan Shanti, one attains great peace. So the demons, upon getting the Amrit, that nectar, that ambrosia that would award them eternal lives, they began to fight amongst themselves what to speak amongst the suras, the devas, the demigods. And then to help the suras, because to help the demigods, Krishna himself incarnated in a wonderful way. What was the name of that wonderful incarnation that had never been seen before? Mohini, Murti, the form of Mohini. What does Mohini mean? Bewilderment. This form of Krishna in the form of the most beautiful woman, the most beautiful, beautiful woman, was so attractive that it stopped everyone from what they were doing and attracted everyone's mind to him. Who is her? Mohini Murti. So we'll read. This is the 9th chapter. This was after all the endeavor to attain Amrit, or immortality, the rose of immortality, was gone through. This, because the demons ultimately possess a self-centered attitude, even though the devas were not pure. In one sense, they had some selfishness, but basically, fundamentally, they were devotees. They wanted Krishna's pleasure. But the demons were self-centered, did not accept the supreme authority, and we will see what stops them and foils their attempt for perfection, for Amrit. Sukadeva Goswami said, this is text 1, chapter 9, canto 8. Thereafter, the demons became inimical toward one another. Throwing and snatching the container of nectar, they gave up their friendly relationship. They may have combined in a friendly way to gain the nectar. They even combined with the demigods. But soon as it was there, soon as they had achieved success, there was no more friendliness. Meanwhile, they saw a very beautiful young woman coming forward towards them. This was Mohini Murti, the Lord, in the form of a beautiful woman. Not beautiful woman, but most beautiful woman. All attractive woman. Upon seeing the beautiful woman, the demon said, "Alas, how wonderful is her beauty. Aho rupam aho dhamma. How wonderful is the luster of her body, and how wonderful the beauty of her youthful age." Speaking in this way, they quickly approached her, full of lusty desires to enjoy her, and began to inquire from her in many ways. "Oh, wonderfully beautiful girl," they said. "You have such nice eyes, resembling the petals of a lotus flower." Immediately some flattery came in because they wanted to win her attention. "Who are you? Where do you come from? What is the purpose in coming here?" And when there's a beautiful young woman, if she cares to speak to a young man, he feels very honored. So they asked her questions. "What is your purpose in coming here? And to whom do you belong? Oh, you whose thighs are extraordinarily beautiful, our minds are becoming agitated simply because of seeing you." Srila Prabhupada's purport. The demons inquired from the wonderfully beautiful girl, "To whom do you belong?" A woman is supposed to belong to her father before her marriage, under the care of the father. So that's what it means, to whom do you belong? Under whose care are you? "To her husband after her marriage, and to her grown sons in her old age." In regard to this inquiry, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the question, "To whom do you belong?" means, "Whose daughter are you?" Since the demons could understand that the beautiful girl was still unmarried, every one of them desired to marry her. Thus they inquired, "Whose daughter are you?" Text 4. what to speak of human beings, even the demigods, demons, siddhas, gandharvas, charanas, and the various directors of the universe, the Prajapatis, have never touched you before. She was clean, chaste, untouched. It is not that we are unable to understand your identity. So they were thinking that her motive in coming to them at that time was that she was looking for a husband, and she was looking to see who the most qualified was for a husband amongst all the personalities that were present, because everyone was there. The suras, the asuras, so many personalities were there. So they were thinking that she was looking for a husband, and they were all eager to be with her. They continued, "Oh, beautiful girl, with beautiful eyebrows. Certainly Providence, by his causeless mercy, has sent you to please the senses and minds of all of us. Is this not a fact? We are now all engaged in enmity amongst ourselves because of this one subject matter, the container of nectar." So there, in their hands, was immortality, and they were struggling to gain deathlessness, freedom from death. And as soon as they saw Mohini Murti, everything was forgotten. They were fighting amongst each other to gain it. As soon as they saw this most beautiful, attractive woman, everything forgotten. Their attention was simply fixed on her. Certainly, there's much we can learn from this. This is a very true, accurate statement of reality in the material world. How powerful is the attraction of man to woman and woman to man. Although we have been born in the same family, we are all asuras, and even the devas and the asuras are born of Kasyapa Muni, we are becoming increasingly inimical. But they saw her before him, and their minds were immediately brought away from the struggle that was confronting them all and making them inimical, the struggle for the nectar. So therefore, understanding and being completely enamored by her, understanding how potent she was, they said, "Oh, thin-waisted woman, who are so beautiful in your prestigious position, we therefore request you to favor us by settling our dispute." They were so captured by the Lord in this form. Bewildered, they immediately accepted her as the authority to settle the dispute as to who would gain the nectar. "All of us, both demons and demigods," they continued in text 7, "have been born of the same father, Kasyapa. And thus we are related as brothers. But now we are exhibiting our personal prowess and dissension. Therefore, we request you to settle our dispute and divide the nectar equally among us." This was just what the Lord wanted. Bewildered them. And bewildered, they're acting very foolishly. Because that is what bewildered means, acting foolishly. So how powerful is Maya? Make a fool out of an intelligent person. It'll make a great, great fool out of a great, great person. How powerful is the Lord's illusory energy? Having thus been requested by the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a beautiful woman, began to smile, looking at them with attractive feminine gestures. He spoke as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, in the form of Mohini, she told the demons, "O sons of Kasyapa Muni, I am Pungsaschala. I am a prostitute," bewildering the minds of men. "How is it that you have put so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman." Prabhupada's purport. Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vaishnavo naiva katavya strishu rajakuleshu cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. In Kali Yuga at this time, no one has faith in politicians, but the other part, more faith in Matajis. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her, for she had appeared as an attractive woman ultimately to cheat them. Indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them, she said to the sons of Kasyapa, how is this? You are all born of great rishis, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, and what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute. The word kamini is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke the dormant lusty desires of a man. Therefore, according to Manu Samhita, every woman should be protected either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada is very, very strong in speaking what is right and what is wrong. No compromise. He said that if I would compromise, remove the regulative principles, or just compromise in general, we could have had so many hundreds and thousands of followers. But no compromise. That was how Prabhupada taught and spoke very clearly. Mohini Murti continued to speak. O demons, as monkeys, jackals, and dogs are unsteady in their sexual relationships and want newer and newer friends every day, women who live independently seek new friends daily. Friendship with such a woman is never permanent. This is the opinion of learned scholars. Sukadeva Goswami is narrating this pastime to Maharaj Prickett, and he continued. After the demons heard the words of Mohini Murti, who had spoken as if jokingly, they were all very confident. They laughed with gravity, and ultimately they delivered the container of nectar into her hands. They were completely bewildered. She said, how can you trust me? I'm just alone here, wandering. I'm not trustworthy. How could you trust me? And they laughed at her words and said, no. You're so beautiful. You're so wonderful. We trust you fully. Please take this nectar. You distribute it as you like. We will trust your decision. Text 12. We'll read the purport to 11 in a moment. Text 12. Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having taken possession of the container of nectar, smiled slightly and spoke in attractive words. She said, my dear demons, if you accept whatever I may do, whether honest or dishonest, then I can take responsibility for dividing the nectar among you. So their minds were completely captivated by her. We'll read the purports of 11 and 12, both short. The Personality of Godhead in his form of Mohini was certainly not joking, but talking seriously with gravity. This is the nature, very much the nature of the material world. When someone is attracted to the opposite sex, they will give away their spiritual life, their immortality. Give it away very easily for something very, very, very temporary. This is called Maya. Prabhupada once said that men, they will trade Krishna for a pretty face. So here we're seeing this. The demons, being captivated by Mohini Murti's bodily features, took her words as a joke and confidently delivered the container of nectar into her hands. Thus Mohini Murti resembles Lord Buddha, who appeared Samohaya Suradvisham to cheat the Asuras. What an interesting comparison. It brings Mohini Murti back into perspective. Because it's so interesting. Because why? Because Mohini Murti was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman, and Lord Buddha was an ascetic, although born as a king in a royal family, he gave everything up and was the greatest ascetic. So great. But Krishna, nonetheless, and Mohini Murti was Krishna, nonetheless, in the form of a beautiful woman. Because again, whatever form Krishna comes in, he is all attractive. And Buddha attracted so many to him. He spoke against the Vedas even. So many yet were attracted to him. Mohini Murti said, "I'll take away your immortality." Still they were attracted to him. Such potency. Whatever form Krishna comes in, he is still the all-attractive Lord. And again, we'll hear in the 10th canto that he comes in the form of a coward boy. Simple and innocent. Coward boy. But then when required, he lifts Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. When he's required, even when on the lap of his mother, just so young, just a baby, still on the breast of his mother, he kills Putana. All powerful at all times, regardless of his forms. Thus, Mohini Murti resembles Lord Buddha, who appeared Samohaya Suradvisham to cheat the Asuras. The word Suradvisham refers to those who are envious of the demigods or devotees. Sometimes an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cheats the atheists. Thus we see here that although Mohini Murti was speaking factually to the Asuras took her words to be facetious. Indeed, they were so confident of Mohini Murti's honesty that they immediately delivered the container of nectar into her hands as if they would allow her to do with the nectar whatever she liked, whether she distributed it, threw it away, or drank it herself without giving it to them. And the purport to text 12. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot abide by anyone's dictation. Whatever he does is absolute. The demons, of course, were deluded by the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus Mohini Murti got them to promise that whatever she would do, they would accept. 13. The chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the sweet words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, meaning whatever you choose to do, we will accept. Completely captivated by her. Whatever you have said is all right. Thus the demons agreed to accept her decision. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. They were preparing to accept the nectar. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the Brahmins and the members of the other orders of society, namely the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, who were all rewarded as they deserved. Thereafter, because charity is required to make something auspicious. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmanas. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusa grass. They were ready. Purport. The Vedas enjoin that for every ritualistic ceremony, one must first become clean by bathing, either in the water of the Ganges or Jamuna or in the sea. Then one may perform the ritualistic ceremony and offer clarified butter into the fire. In this verse, the words paridhaya ahattani are especially significant. A sannyasi, or person about to perform a ritualistic ceremony, should not dress himself in clothing sewn with a needle. So this was the old standard for sannyasis, and still for someone performing the ritualistic ceremony or performing a sacrifice, No one will wear a kurta or a t-shirt, just chada and dhoti, nothing unsewn, nothing sewn, all cloth that is unsewn. But previously the sannyasis would never wear kurtas or anything like that. No sewn cloth. They would never touch fire, and no, they would never cook, and they would never use sewn cloth. Austerities. O king, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena fully decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her ankle bells tinkling, entered the arena, walking very slowly because of her big low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride, looking at everyone, capturing their eyes. So if she looked at everyone, gave everyone a little glance with the eyes, everyone would say, oh, she likes me, she'll give it to me. They were restless, moving here and there. Her breasts were like water jugs, her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants, and she carried a water pot in her hand. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears, adorned with golden earrings, made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breast moved slightly aside. When the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling, they were all completely enchanted. Oh, she likes me. This is the power of Maya. And no one should think they are above being captivated by Maya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So reminding us always that this is God in a feminine form, and that the Goddess of Fortune is her associate. This form assumed by the Personality of Godhead challenged the Goddess of Fortune. The Goddess of Fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the Goddess of Fortune in beauty. It is not that the Goddess of Fortune being female is the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful Goddess of Fortune by assuming a female form. Continuing, text 19. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes, because ultimately, what is the principle that they abide by? A devotee, he may be attracted to this, and he may be attracted to that, he may think this and that, but his ultimate principle is that Krishna should be pleased. That's his ultimate principle. But one who is demonic by nature has his ultimate principle, no matter how filled he is with morality. Yas yasta bhaktir bhagavata kinsana tvayas. Oh, yes, yes, to bhakti bhagavati kinsana. Savas gunas tatra samaste sura harav abhaktasya kuta mahaguna manaratain asato davato bohi. Ultimately, someone who is not committed in devotional service will be riding on the chariot of his mind. And as a result of that, ultimately, who is in the center of his life? He is. And ultimately, if it's a choice between him and others, he will choose him. So ultimately, the moral principles that he runs his life by will crumble, because ultimately his integrity is taking care of himself. That's what it's ultimately based on. So in that sense, crooked. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible. Why? Like a snake, if you give some milk or something good to a snake, what will happen? Poison increases. So similarly, if something wonderful is awarded to a snake, like nectar, demon-like snakes, or Vrikasura, who gave a benediction, or Hiranyakashipu was given benediction by Brahma and then Vrikasura by Lord Shiva. The result was disastrous, like feeding milk to a snake. So the Lord thought that it was not at all feasible, it was dangerous to supply milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. So the demons were on one side, the demigods on the other, and Mohini Murti was walking, captivating everyone's attention. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Mohini Murti, the Master of the Universe, arranged separate lines of sitting places and seated the demigods and demons according to their position. Oh, you sit here, and you sit here, and you sit here. Taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, and thus cheated them of their share of the nectar. Then she administered the nectar to the demigods who were sitting at a distant place to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death. Prabhupada's short purport. Mohini Murti, the Personality of Godhead, gave the demigods seats at a distance. So the demons thought, oh, the demigods are at a distance, they're not going to get anything. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously, so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would only get a little of the nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The word vanchayan, upasancharai, indicate that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. O King, this is text 22, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, whether just or unjust, now to keep this promise, to show their equilibrium, and to save themselves from fighting with a woman, they remained silent. Just or unjust, to keep their promise, to show how detached they were, to impress her in that way, to save themselves from fighting with a woman. The demons had developed affection for Mohini Murti and a kind of faith in her, and they were afraid of disturbing their relationship. Therefore, they showed respect and honor to her words and did not say anything that might disturb their friendship with her. Short purport. The demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mohini Murti that although the demigods were served first, the demons were pacified merely by sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, "Demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar first. So let them have it first. Since you are not like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes and are so pleased with me, it is better for you to wait until after the demigods drink." Very, very sweetly she spoke to them. Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon and the sun, however, because of permanent animosity towards Rahu, understood the situation. Thus Rahu was detected. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, using his disc, which was sharp like a razor, at once cut off Rahu's head. When Rahu's head was severed from his body, the body, being untouched by the nectar, could not survive. We'll read purports 2:24-25. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of the demigods. Here, one may ask why the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and the sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of the demigods, the moon and the sun immediately detected him and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead also became aware of him. He allows what to go on, the things to go on as he desires. So anything that he doesn't know, it means he doesn't want to know for the purpose of a particular pastime. Because if Krishna is always aware of everything, that will ruin pastimes in a sense. So although he's sarvagya, he's also mugdata. He's fully expanded and at the same time compressed in what he knows. Because if he was in Vrindavan, herding the cows and thinking of all the everything going on in the universe, hearing every prayer that every person is asking him and controlling everything, how could he enjoy his pastimes? That would stand in the way of his pastimes. When his mother would say to him, open your mouth, I want to see if you've eaten dirt. And then he would say, who is my mother to tell me this? I know everything, I'm the Supreme Lord. But rather he feels fear when his mother chastises him. This makes his pastimes more relishable. So although he is undoubtedly sarvagya, knows everything, he also has the contradictory quality of being mugdata, knowing only what is appropriate for his position within the pastime. So he did not detect Rahu, but inspired the sun and the moon, Surya, Chandra, to detect Rahu. And then when pointed out to him, he cut off his head because he wanted to show the effects of the nectar. This is the purport to 25. After he cut off his head, Rahu, when the nectar entered the mouth but had not gone into the body, so therefore the body died but the head remained eternal or immortal, and therefore everyone could see the effect of the nectar. Purport 2.25. When the Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, severed Rahu's head from his body, the head remained alive, although the body died. Rahu had been drinking nectar through his mouth, and before the nectar entered his body, his head was cut off. Thus Rahu's head remained alive, whereas the body died. This wonderful act performed by the Lord was meant to show that nectar is miraculous ambrosia. 26. Rahu's head, however, having been touched by the nectar, became immortal. Thus, Lord Brahma accepted Rahu's head as one of the planets. Since Rahu is an eternal enemy of the moon and the sun, he always tries to attack them on the nights of the full moon and the dark moon. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is text 27, is the best friend and well-wisher of the three worlds. Thus, when the demigods had almost finished drinking the nectar, the Lord, in the presence of all the demons, disclosed his original form. The place, the time, the cause, the purpose, the activity, and the ambition were all the same for both the demigods and the demons. But the demigods achieved one result and the demons another. So there is a lesson to be learned, especially in this pastime. We saw from the very beginning, the demigods were having trouble. They prayed to the Lord. He said, make a truce with them. They made a truce with the demigods, with the demons, trying to churn the nectar, the amrita, the ocean of milk, to get the amrita together. Then part of the plan was to carry them under a hill, but it was too heavy, it crushed them. So the Lord himself carried Mandara Mountain. And then the Lord at the same time carried both the demigods and the demons there. Then they put the mountain in the water. It sunk and he became Korma, the tortoise. And then Ajit on top. And then he empowered everyone with the modes of nature. So ultimately he was doing everything. Then he churned the nectar, then so many things were produced, and the demigods followed his instructions and did not become attached to anything. And then when the demons snatched the nectar from Dhanvantari, it appeared that everything was lost. And they called out again and again, which is the mark of a devotee, independence, because a devotee feels himself helpless. Indeed he is. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dratya. But he's aware, conscious of his helplessness. And this is the first step in surrender. Godtripte varanam tata vishvas. With faith. Recognizing helplessness and full dependence on the Lord. So when the demigods had finished everything, he disclosed his form, and the demons understood they had been cheated by the Lord. He had again taken the sides of the demons. Both had worked. The time, the place, everything was the same. The result was there, but the demigods ended up with everything and the demons nothing. Because the demigods are always under the shelter of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, they could very easily drink the nectar and get its result. Even though everything appeared to be lost, yet Krishna was on their side. Raki Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Raki. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable to achieve the result they desired. So we, hearing all this, should desire to become always dependent devotees on the Lord. Purport. Better to become a devotee, not better to become a demon. In Bhagavad Gita 4:11, it is said, Yayatamam prapadyante tam tataiva vadam yaham. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Judge who rewards or punishes different persons according to their surrender to his lotus feet. Therefore, it can actually be seen that although karmis and bhaktis may work in the same place, at the same time, with the same energy, with the same ambition, they achieve different results. The karmis transmigrate through different bodies in the cycle of birth and death, sometimes going upward, sometimes downward, thus suffering the results of their actions in the karma chakra, the cycle of birth and death. The devotees, however, because of fully surrendering at the lotus feet of the Lord, are never baffled in their attempts. Although externally they work almost like the karmis, the devotees go back home, back to Godhead, and achieve success in every effort. So this is like the moral of this pastime, the conclusion that we are to reach. The demons or atheists have faith in their own endeavors, but although they work very hard day and night, they cannot get any more than their destiny. The devotees, however, can surpass the reactions of karma and achieve wonderful results even without effort. It is also said, Phalena Purichyate, one's success or defeat in any activity is understood by its result. There are many karmis in the dress of devotees. There are many karmis in the dress of devotees, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose, like he detected Rahu. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification, but a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3:9, Yagyatat Kamano Nyatra Lokayam Kamabandana, one who works for Lord Vishnu is free from this material world, and after giving up his body, he goes back home, back to Godhead. A karmi, however, although externally working like a devotee, is entangled in his non-devotional activity, and thus he suffers the tribulations of material existence. Thus, from the results achieved by the karmis and devotees, one can understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts differently for the karmis and jnanis than for the devotees. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita therefore states, Krishna bhakti nishkamata eva shanta bhakti mukti sridhikame shakali oshanta. The karmis who desire sense gratification, the jnanis who aspire for the liberation of merging into the existence of the Supreme, and the yogis who seek material success and mystic power are all restless, and ultimately they are baffled. But the devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. Now, grammatically, I'd like to read that last sentence again and just make a point on the grammar of the sentence. There's something called a parenthetical clause Which means that the second part, the part of the sentence that's in the parenthetical clause is equal to the word that it's modifying. So, but the devotee, and now comes the parenthetical clause, which defines what a devotee is. It's equal to what a devotee is. But the devotee, who does not expect any personal benefit, and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is what a devotee is. So, it is very wonderful to be a devotee. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yattati siddhaya. It's rare, it's a dholava, rare to be a real devotee. Only ambition, no personal benefit, but his only ambition, desire to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. So the full blessings of Krishna's mercy come to such a devotee. The Kamis, yes. Okay. Now the final verse and final purport in this chapter, continuing with the moral or the conclusion of this pastime. In human society, there are various activities performed for the protection of one's wealth and life by one's words, one's mind, and one's actions. But they are all performed for one's personal or extended sense gratification with reference to the body. All these activities are baffled because of being separate from devotional service. But when the same activities are performed for the satisfaction of the Lord, the beneficial results are distributed to everyone, just as water poured on the root of a tree is distributed throughout the entire tree. So an activity, two people may be working, doing the same thing, but with different motivation, and the results will be different. One, a devotee doing something, working in some way, but working for Krishna's pleasure, the results, even, or the activity may seem just like a non-devotee's, but the activities, but the result will be different, as the result between the demons and the devas was different. Prabhupada's purport. This is the distinction between materialistic activities and activities performed in Krishna consciousness. The entire world is active, and this includes the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the bhaktis. However, all activities, except for those of the bhaktis, the devotees, end in bafflement and a waste of time and energy. Mogasya moga kamano moga gyanavachetasa. If one is not a devotee, his hopes, his activities, and his knowledge are all baffled. A non-devotee works for his personal sense gratification or for the sense gratification of his family, society, community, or a nation. But because of all such activities, because all such activities are separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are considered asat. The word asat means bad or temporary, and sat means permanent and good. Activities performed for the satisfaction of Krishna are permanent and good. But asat activity, although sometimes celebrated as philanthropy, altruism, nationalism, thisism or thatism, will never produce any permanent result, and is therefore all bad. So from Prabhupada's point of view, the spiritual point of view, the eternal point of view, all activities other than those that develop one's Krishna consciousness are useless or worse. Shrama evahi kevalam. Useless or bad, waste of time. Prabhupada, when he would speak, he would use the term useless or waste of time to mean something that really was horrible to do. That is a waste of time. It means that no sane person would do that. And sometimes he spoke as if he showed that how different we are from the non-devotees, or supposed to be different from the non-devotees, in that the non-devotees, their whole endeavor, or so much of their endeavor, is how to waste time between the sports and the games and the this and the that. all how to waste time in the name, what do they call it? Recreation or something, or sports or entertainment. But purpose is to waste time. And Prabhupada's point was, Prahlad Maharaj's point is that komara matchadat pragyo dhamam brahmanam iha dulava manusha janma tarapadruva martadam, that human life is very rare and it passes so quickly, and it is like water on the leaf of a lotus flower. It can fall off at any moment, so therefore we should not waste time and use every moment properly to advance in Krishna consciousness. Even a little work done in Krishna consciousness is a permanent asset and is all good because it is done for Krishna, the all good Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is everyone's friend, Sridham Savabhutanam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only enjoyer and proprietor of everything, Bhuktiram Jagatapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. Therefore, any activity performed for the Supreme Lord is permanent. As a result of such activities, the performer is immediately recognized. Nachatasman Manushechu Kastin Me Priyakritamam. Such a devotee, because of full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is immediately transcendental, although he may superficially appear to be engaged in materialistic activities. The only distinction between materialistic activity and spiritual activity is that material activity is performed only to satisfy one's senses, whereas spiritual activity is meant to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Demons, devotees, materialistic, spiritual. Who is in the center? This is the essential question. Bhagavad Dharma. This is the point of Krishna consciousness. And to go to Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna has to be in the center in a very, very special way, as the residents of Vrindavan love him and place him in the center. He is the cynosure of everyone's attention and love in their own special way. By spiritual activity, everyone factually benefits, whereas by materialistic activity, no one benefits, and instead one becomes entangled in the laws of karma. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 8th canto, 9th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord Incarnates as Mohini Murti. So tomorrow, it's not that the demons are going to say, oh, anyway, now we lost the nectar, let's go, let's be happy with what we have. No, the next chapter talks about the fight between the demigods and the demons. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mohini Murti ki jai.